Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Let's Boogie 101 show. Another episode, another night, another day. We're here. We're going to have some fun tonight. We're going to have some information with a special guest that's coming on. This is the Let's Boogie 101 show right here on Fresh Nation Radio, WJON. We come on each and every Saturday morning on Fresh Nation Radio from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. You can find our links all over social media and other podcast sites like iHeartRadio and Spotify as an example. We're going to have a great show tonight. I have a friend coming in. Who is a screenwriter, He has some exciting news to share with us, and we're going to talk with him all about what he's up to and what he's doing. But before we do that, there are some things. There are some things that I want to talk about, but right now I'm going to introduce. I mean, I keep saying introduce. I only say this because for those that don't know my co-host, Dahlia Manette, I want to say hello to her, and I want her to say something to y'all. She's working on her PhD, y'all. So we might be calling her Dr. Manette after a little while. You know what I'm saying? How you doing, Dahlia? What's going on?
I'm good. I'm doing very well. I am blessed. You know, I got an A on my paper, my 15-page paper. So I am good. I am really good. So, but yes, you definitely will, for 1 year after I graduate, call me Dr. D or Dr. Dahlia.
Uh-oh. Yes,
I deserve that.
There's the doctor in the house. You making house calls? What's going on?
Hey. No, but I will definitely grade some papers.
Okay, that's good. And then my main man, always holding it down, been with me from day one, ladies and gentlemen, comedian Tattletale. What's going on, brother? How you feeling?
How y'all doing out there in Radio Land? Look, I feel so good. Look at me. Look at Tattletale. I'm on the air with Let's Boogie and Dahlia Manette. Cannot beat this. I'm so proud of you. I'm so proud of you getting that GED, girl. You going places. I'm telling you. I tell you, you left the sugar alone. Look at you now. Boom, shakalaka.
He said, get your GED.
Stop wearing blonde weaves like you wanted me to do.
Hey, but it worked. We was making money.
Hold up, y'all. What's with the blonde weave? What's that? Come on, you got to fill us in on that. Where did that come in at the picture? I know y'all was doing things with music.
Brilliant idea. This was back in the day. Brilliant idea was, Dahlia, wear blonde weave. It would look fantastic on you. And, you know, we were performing and stuff. And people loved it. It really did look good on me because it wasn't blonde.
It looked good. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So you did put it on. You did.
She looked good. Yeah.
About a year. Yeah. I did blonde hair.
For a whole year.
Yeah. About a year, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Is it true that blondes have more fun? Is that true?
No.
Did you get more gigs?
Same amount of fun. No. same amount of dates as when I had blonde hair, hair, black hair, brown hair.
Okay.
I do it all.
I don't know, but I remember that one night at Club New York, when everybody was buying you drinks and pouring you champagne and everything. I remember with my man Henry Hill and his partner Wayman. Howie D was there too. That was on Howie Thursday D. night.
Shout out to Howie D.
That's my man. That's my man. He a good dude. Okay.
I'm not a drinker. If anything, I'll drink. I think at that time I was drinking like Amaretto. That's
Amaretto.
It. Champagne, and whoever was sitting in the booth with us, we had a good time then.
For real.
Nice.
Oh, man. Nice. Yeah.
Hey, listen, I want to ask you something because current news here, you know, we had some really, how could I put it? Some big news come across that's been leading up with the whole P. Diddy thing. I need to know your take on it. What do you think about it? Whoever wants to jump in first, go ahead. Because I need to know what y'all are thinking about it, what you thought.
There's an old saying, quit while you're ahead. Because, you know, there's a song by Bob Marley, Get Up, Stand Up. And there's a line in there. He says, you can fool some of the people some of the time, but you can't fool all the people all the time. Mm-hmm. What you're doing, after a while, it's going to catch up to you. It's going to catch up to you. Because, number one, you're going to do it to the wrong person, and they're going to have ties to very, very big, influential people that are bigger than you. You have no idea the kind of money that these people have, all right? You don't even see them. They don't even make the phone call. They have somebody else make the phone call.
Right, yeah. Right.
And it appears that that's what he did. He stepped on a toe that he wasn't supposed to step on. R. Kelly did the same thing. He stepped on a toe that he wasn't supposed to step on.
Wow. Wow. It's crazy. It's a crazy thing, man. Dahlia, how do you feel about it?
I think he's getting what he deserves.
Yeah.
And I'll say that in all honesty, I'm not saying that to be judgmental, but if you were around in a day where he was doing what he was doing, you would understand if you were in the industry. And it is not surprising to me that this is happening. It is surprising that it took so long.
You know, I remember when we had Isaac Hayes' daughter on, remember? And she said that, you know, she's been around this guy and this is definitely what goes on. I know several people, security people that have worked for him. I'm talking about from way back, from day one.
Yeah.
You know? And these stories are not new. So I agree with you, Tabitha. You know, it comes down to the fact that, look, you know, you didn't quit. You know, you got a break, you got passes, and you got away with a lot of things. And at the end of the day, what, you know, it's going to catch up with you. I mean, that's the bottom line. It's going to catch. And I think it's finally caught up with him. And, you know, it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate that you get to a place in life where you've been blessed with so many, you know, material things. But if your mind is not right, you know, if your mind is not right and you take the approach that, you know, you're untouchable. You know, you're John Gotti, bulletproof, and, you know, Mr. Untouchable and Nicky Barnes and all this. And you want to be a gangster, then you want to be a music guy. You know, it's really sad, you know. And then you prey on people that really just want to be in the industry. There's a young lady right now, a new suit came out. Cassie, one of Cassie's friends. You heard about that? She's a songwriter. Yep. She just said, look, man, I just wanted people to listen to my music. That's all I wanted. That's all I wanted. Listen to my music.
This is what, you know, and I always say to Tattletale, it's not the music. I love the music. It's the music business that is so horrible and makes it really bad for everybody else. And it's nothing new. You know, this is one of the reasons why Tattletale went with me everywhere.
That's right.
What I was doing in the music industry because of the things that would happen for a woman that was there by herself, who didn't have a manager, who didn't have some kind of protection with her. And that's what these people do. They prey on you.
They wait. And you know what? And also you get those who will do anything to be famous or to be in that circle, you know, who think that success, I'll do anything. And, you know, which is okay. You're grown. You can make a decision for yourself or whatever you want to do. So, those that are willing participants, you have those. But then you have those who you kind of know you can lure them into this type of behavior, you know. And I was talking to someone today real quick. I was talking to someone today who has this pastor that comes on. It's their pastor. They listen to him. I think his name is Pastor Lovey. I don't know if you're familiar with him anyway. He's mentioned that Puffy's son, Christian, had came to him for counseling.
Wow.
Recently, and the next couple of days, you see the raids go on, right? Now, I also had a conversation with the same person a couple of weeks back, maybe a couple of months back. Oh, the kids probably are not affected by it. How can your kids not be affected by this? First of all, you hear that your father's
living
doing
in
this.
The house that he's doing this stuff.
Yeah, yep. and oh, well, he has money. I said, what kind of dumb statement what are you talking about? Because he has money, that means they're just going to ignore. This is their father. And you know, other kids or other friends there looking at them. Yeah, your father's this, your father's that. You know how people are, especially the ones that are jealous of you because you have all this stuff. You know they cracking hard on you. You know they saying things to you. And you have to you know, sit in denial and what have you. But it has to affect you. It has to affect your kids, man. You know, you got a bunch of kids, man. You got a bunch of males, too, and they're seeing this. Are you trying to get them involved in that? You're telling them that this is the lifestyle that you should lead. It's okay because we have money. We can do whatever we want. And that's not right.
You have money, but you don't have wealth. And there's a difference between money and wealth. Wealth never runs out. And the people, when you step on the wealthy's toes, that's when you're going to catch it. That's when you catch it. Because in their mind, they look at you, they say, no, you need to stay in your league. You had no business overstepping your boundary. That's how they look at you. And that money he got to them, it ain't nothing. It ain't nothing. When you see what some people are making as opposed to what he has, it's phenomenal. It's phenomenal. You'd be like, what? Go ahead, D.
I think this is why, a year ago, he gave back everybody their music, their catalogs, because he was trying to stop what was coming. Because why didn't you give these catalogs to these artists decades ago when they could make some money off of the work that they hopes that it would shut them up.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
That's the only reason why you did it. You know.
Yeah.
You know, money is to the point where he felt that he was untouchable, and then he's already out of control. I know people that said, look, this guy's been out of control for years and years and years. You know, and however he got to where he got to, he just repeated the same process and on other people, which is unfortunate that he had to go through that. But, you know, it is what it is. Because someone is in a cycle of, like, say someone is alcoholics through their family, that doesn't mean that cycle or that chain can't be broken.
Exactly.
The chain can be broken. Someone has to break that chain. You know, hurt people, we understand that.
That's
because you've been abused does not mean you have to become the abuser.
Right.
And hurt people. So someone, again, has to break that chain. So you had Clive Davis, who mentored Andre Harrell in all kind of ways, according to what they're saying, allegedly. Then you had Andre Harrell, who mentored P. Diddy in all kind of ways, allegedly. Then you had P. Diddy. They're talking about Usher. They're talking, you know, a lot of stuff goes on, man. And it's like, because of who you are, the power that you have gained, you know, people were afraid of this guy. They were afraid of him.
Not only that, Les, this is the problem. P. Diddy was not a teenager when he entered the business. He was not a child that didn't know better. What he decided to do, he was a grown man. I'm sorry, you were a grown man. You decided you were quitting college. You knew that you were quitting college to come to New York and do what you were going to do. So you made a choice as a grown man to do what you did. Now, what you did after that is you turned on people who were not grown. They were not adults. Usher was, 13, 14?
Justin Bieber was young.
Justin Bieber. Allegedly, you did, you know, you did these things with these kids. That is where I have a problem with. If you're a grown person and you make a decision.
That's what I said earlier, yes.
I have no problem with it. But when you start being a predator to young kids, to young girls, to young boys, then yes, you deserve to go to jail.
Agree. Because like I said, you have willing participants. You have those that are willing to do it. So why would you want to take a kid that has aspirations to want to be in the music business, entertainment, and then change their whole mindset about what they thought? They just want to sing and be famous and be recognized and make some money, whatever, whatever. And you turn that around and you just give them the whole dirty side of the whole thing, which is crazy.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, which is crazy. You know, why my son, you know, I was very leery about having my son get involved in this stuff because I know from way back, my older brother used to tell us, man, this person's doing this person's doing that. You know, and it's always some hidden stuff. I was watching a movie very quickly with Jamie Foxx, and I'm looking at the movie a little while ago, and I'm saying, who is he really? I know who he's playing right now. I see this part he's playing is great. You have to live up to that, man. You have to live up to that image that you portray to the public, because once the public finds out about you, it's devastating to a lot of people that look up to you, and then they meet you, and they find out you're not that person they thought you was. Now, nobody's perfect. Bar none. Nobody's perfect. But at the end of the day, it's not cool, man. And it's, I know, you know, all the people, I know they do it. Our people do it. I get all of these people that are doing this, especially messing with these children, need to be stopped. Need to be stopped.
Yeah.
It's really that simple. They really need to be stopped. You know? Go ahead.
I say this, anybody, no matter what business they're in, if they try to separate you from your minor children, you got to look at those flags. You got to look at those flags. They're trying to separate you from your minor children. You have to look at that. You got to be very careful with that because you can't trust nobody with your children. You can't. And you know, even with grown-ups, always go somewhere where you have protection. Take a male figure with you. All right. Take a male figure with you that's going to have your best interest at heart, because this is ridiculous. And what gets me is this. Our people, our brothers who get out here in the business and do well. I mean, there are examples of other black men that you could follow that didn't do this nonsense. Right. All right.
Right.
All right. You don't hear no nonsense about Byron Allen, and he's a billionaire. He owns so many production companies. He owns those court TVs. He owns the Weather Channel now. And you don't hear nothing about this brother with no nonsense.
Right.
Just quietly behind the scenes doing what he does. Even with one of the biggest personalities that ever lived, Muhammad Ali. You ain't even hear about him running a stop sign. Well, I'm like, what's wrong with these brothers? There's so many good examples out there for you to conduct yourself. But all this other business, but you can't mix business with hoodness. You can't. Mm. You got to leave the hood alone.
Business
all right?
with hoodness. You said
that. Yeah. You can't mix the two.
Before we keep going, this is just for people of color here. Nickelodeon has the same issues where you have the white writers, the white producers preying on these children, doing things to their employees that were demeaning and debasing. So it's not just the Sean Puff Diddy, whatever you want to call him. It's not just him. It is the music.
No, not at all.
It is the entertainment industry that has attracted these disgusting people.
Yeah, I say our brothers because the legacy that we went through, how we were brought to this country, and we endured all that brutality. We endured all that. All right, we endured all that, and so and for you to perpetrate among somebody who trusts you and think you're going to guide them, and you perpetrate that nonsense on them, there's no word for it. Seriously, there's no word for it.
I agree with you.
When you betray somebody's trust. That's horrible. And number one, you're a predator. And one thing what predators do, they go where the victims are. They do things to draw victims to them. Like predators on the street, those molesters, they'll have a little puppy or a little toy or something to attract the kids' attention. Mm-hmm. Stuff like that. And basically, he did the same thing.
Yeah.
That's true. It's absolutely true. You know what? We're gonna take a turn. And we're going to bring our guest in because, you know, we can go all day about this because that's a subject that needs to be discussed all day. We can do an hour, 2 hours on this. But with no further ado, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Les Boogie One-on-One Show. Screenwriter, friend of mine, his name is Mr. A.P. Ricard. Let's bring him in, y'all. How you doing, brother?
Hey, what up, dude?
All right. My man. Welcome. Good to see you, brother. And good to have you on.
Thank you.
I know you heard a little bit about what we were talking about, right?
Yes, sir. Hey, I'm like Denzel, man. I'm a ghost.
Okay.
Yeah. Gotcha.
you as close as I get to actually having any communication outside the world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes, sir. Right. How you guys doing?
Everything's good. We're doing good. Yeah. You know,
that's Miss Dahlia Manette. That's comedian Tattletale up there, Mr. A.P. Ricard, y'all.
Yes, sir.
All right, listen, A.P., you're a very interesting individual. Let me do something very quickly. Hold on. Okay, let me do that.
Uh-oh, I think he did something wrong. So tell us, I know that he told me that you have done a number of series. Before we build up to the two things that we want to talk about, tell me what you've done before so that we could familiarize the audience with what you've done. Because like you said, you're ghost.
I've ghost written a book for a television personality that was actually published by Simon Schuster. That's one. I actually helped a young lady, a best-selling author, with her television drama series called It's Sex Chronicles. That was actually
Oh, really? Okay.
I read,
she is actually Yeah, she's actually the one that actually brought me into the light, you know. Okay. But I really appreciate her and the name of Cliff Benton. I got to give him a shout out. But I met a few actors and things of that nature that wanted me to help them with a few things, and a couple of producers that actually put some things out there that I help, you know, basically on a consulting basis. I don't really say anything about those things because my focus now is selfish. I'm on me right now, trying to get my projects out there. I spend so much time helping other people get theirs, but right now I got to focus on what I do.
All right, AP, listen, I do want you to explain you're from Detroit, okay? You're from Detroit.
Yes, sir.
Tell everyone about your journey, how you made it to New York, how it all started, how you even started this journey to where you're at now. You can abbreviate it, but I think it's very important for people to understand your motivation.
Well, back home, I went back out of the military. I left Washington, D.C. I used to work at the Pentagon. I left home, left the Pentagon, went back to Detroit, and trying to figure out what it is I really wanted to do. But I woke up in the middle of the night because of a dream I had. The dream was so vivid, it was so clear, I could remember every single detail of the dream. When I woke up from the dream, I sat up in bed, and the first thing I said was, that was incredible, because it played in my mind like a movie. And so I called my mom, because in the dream it said, write it down, move to New York, write it down, move to New York. I never experienced anything like that. So I called my mom, and I told my mom, you know, that I was going to move to New York. She says, oh, you got transferred? Because I was working as a software hardware engineer. And she says, well, you got transferred? I said, no. I explained the dream to her. She said, son, you're an idiot. It was a dream. If you go out to New York trying to be a published novelist, do you know how many people go to New York with the intent of being a published novelist? She says, I would encourage you to do so if I didn't check your homework. I used to check homework. Writing is not your strong suit. So basically, I left anyway. And 3 years later, I came to New York. 3 years later, I was published. I got published again. My very first novel was entitled Damn. I thought it apropos for me to name it after the first thing I said when I woke up from the dream. So a small publishing company in Brooklyn called A&B Publishers actually brought me in, and they published the book. This is where I met. This is where I met Zane, one of my favorite authors. She actually encouraged me and actually brought me into her publishing company, because at that particular time, Simon & Schuster had picked her up, and basically she became a subsidiary of Simon & Schuster. And she published my next novel, Caged Innocence, based on a true story about a young man from Hattiesburg, Mississippi, who went to prison for a murder he didn't commit. Now, I went to Mississippi. This was supposed to be my very first nonfiction. I went to Mississippi to interview him, and by the time I got finished interviewing him, I was convinced his father, who was the first black police officer in the history of Hattiesburg, Mississippi, I was convinced that his father had to know what that murder impended on his own son. But I couldn't prove it, so Simon Schuster. Yes. Simon Schuster forced me to realize that story. So then my next book is Shadow of Memory. And from that point, I figured I need to start dabbling in film and television.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. So what was one of the first projects that you put together for film or television?
Well, the very first project, my manager, who
she got you there. Look at that, she got your book. That's what she does. That's good. Damn, that's the name of it. Damn. That's all right. That's all right. You're showing your book. Showing your first book. Okay.
My first experience in film and television. I used to hang out at the Sugar Bar. Valerie allowed me to utilize their place to hold my little meetings and things of that nature. And that at that time, I met one of my mentors, the favorite people to actually deal with at that time was Melvin Van Peebles. And when I met my manager, he wanted to manage me. He's never managed anything outside of music. His clients included Ike Turner. His clients also included Conjunction. He had a number of other, including Raz B from B2K. He had a number of individuals in the music industry that he managed, but he wanted to spread his wings, so he wanted to get off into film and television. Somebody introduced me to him, and he's the one that actually introduced me to Ike Turner, and I would make Ike's story. So that's how that came to be.
So let's dig into the Ike story. You sat with Ike. Tell us how that experience was, and what it was all about. How long that went on, and how did you put that together with Ike Turner?
Well, it was funny because I was just like everybody else. I didn't want to do the Ike Turner story because of all the, you know, the headlines of him being abusive and things of that nature.
Right.
So I'm telling you, the first 3 hours that I actually had a conversation with him made me understand that somebody done something really sneaky around here. You know,
really,
you're trying to villainize somebody so that you can uplift somebody else. That's the way I felt about it, you know. And hearing his story, hearing Ike was the type of person that if he fell in love with a woman, he wanted to marry the woman. And everybody used to tell him, Ike, you can't marry everybody, you know. But he was the type of person that didn't want to take advantage of anyone and things of that nature. Most people didn't know that Ike didn't drink or smoke or do drugs at all. His band, he was strict on that. He wouldn't allow anybody in his band. If he found out that you were doing drugs, you were out of his band. You know,
it always got the impression that he was a drug addict or a drinker. That was the impression that came through, you know, on the stories and stuff that you've heard of him. So I'm surprised that's not who he was.
That's not who he was at all. It wasn't that he felt like he was being betrayed by Tina, you know, going off and wanting to do music outside of him without inviting him is when things kind of spiraled out of control. Mm-hmm. Because that was the love of his life. He didn't mess around with Tina when they first met because Tina was dating somebody from his band. So he didn't in the beginning at all. But I don't want to give it all away because we reveal all of that stuff.
Right. That's in the story. Right. That's in the movie. Absolutely.
Yes. Yes.
So did you have a lot of opposition to making this movie considering that there were a couple that was so controversial and the movie that was, you know, about Tina Turner's life really villainized him? Did you have any issues with people kind of saying, okay, go forward with this and tell the story, or what happened?
Once I explained it to my mom, and she said, go forward, I didn't care what nobody else said. Okay. You know, when I explained it to her and told her what, you know, the reason that I was going, that I was thinking about doing it and things of that nature, she said, go for it. And right then I didn't really care because everybody has a story. Mm-hmm. And just because somebody brings an individual to you and they look so innocent and things, you know, there's a lot of evil folks in sheep clothing.
Right.
So, you know, basically my thing is we're not trying to compete or go against what's written and what's love got to do with it or portrayed and what's love got to do with it. We're not trying to do that. What we're trying to do is history, you know, show what a dynamic musician, what a dynamic talent, what a dynamic individual he was. Because people don't know that side of him. They don't know that he was a really good person who was always out trying to help kids understand that they should respect women and they should do the things necessary to get their education and things like that. He sat down with many of kids, you know, trying to encourage them to do the right thing. What we're going to portray, what you're going to see, a friend of mine, executive producer Howard Clay Jr. and I, Howard Clay Jr. saw the project, and this young man, this gentleman, I can't wait till you guys talk with him. This young man, he is an incredible individual. His vision, his foresight, and what he brings to the table in the film and television industry, people need to know. And so from now on, if anything that I do, he's more than invited to come along and try to do. One of the things that he did, which was really outstanding in my eyes, was he reached out to, say, for instance, found series that deal with domestic violence.
Say that again. Say that again. Say that again. You broke up a little bit. Say that again.
He reached out to 501c3s, nonprofits that deal okay. with domestic violence, that deal with drug abuse and things of that nature. He okay. explained, sat down and explained to them what we were out to do and what we were trying to do so that they would understand that, look, we need to tell this story. We know that it's going to receive a lot of controversy. We know that people are going to come out the woodworks and say this and that and this and that without having known the man himself, you know. So he reached out and said, look, this is what we're going to do. This is our approach. And we're going to do all that we can to bring awareness to domestic violence, to drug abuse, and to everything else. But that has nothing to do with what we want you to gain from this story. What we want you to gain from this story is an understanding of an individual who has been villainized from day one. Mm-hmm. And you make up your mind what you think about this person, okay? But do not do it blindly. Don't sit up there and judge somebody without you knowing who this person is. And just to speak of that, I created a feature film called You Never Know, because it encompasses what we're talking about right now. You're judging a book by its cover. Mm-hmm. We all have done things that we're not proud of and things of that nature. But to see how what the mistakes that he had made stretched out and made into, he's made into this creature from what's love got to do with it is just not right. They did not portray him the way you should portray any human being. You know, and things of that, especially if you really don't know what the situation is. Mm-hmm. Say alleged, when you just like he uses all the time, say alleged until you find out.
Right.
Don't go out and just mark this man as the guy who you would, or the poster guy for domestic abuse, you know, and things of that nature, or stuffing cake in Tina's mouth, or, you know. It's just amazing how you can see what is going on in the world today, and you understand that you actually see, just like you guys just got finished talking about, you actually see that this actually happened. But with him, you didn't actually see that it actually happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. You're gonna notice things too. Say, for instance, when somebody was getting ready to put out a new album, all of a sudden, here his name comes up again, and this is what he used to talk about. Right. Here his name again, you know, so it could bring attention to the new album that's coming out. And then all you see is the person sitting up, and I want to talk ill of the dead or anything like that, but I just think what was done to elevate one person brought this other person down to his knees.
Right.
And his life spiraled out of control from that point, because he had never loved anybody the way that he loved her at that point. But his last wife was the love of his life, because she stuck with him, you know, through everything that he had to go through. But he had never lost his love for her, even though he knew he was vilified.
Right. It's a hell of a story. It's a hell of a story.
Well, I will say I did hear a story where they were both hitting each other.
That they were.
He gave as much as he got, and vice versa. So I did hear that before. And, mm-hmm. I will say I've never heard of him beating anyone else after her. So
Or before.
Before, exactly. So I, again, like you said, we were not there. We were not in the band. We were not in the business when they were in the business or seen what they seen. And there's, it's a complex situation with a lot of different facets. And so, yeah, I leave myself open to it just to see the story.
One of the things he used to say is, AP, sometimes I'll go into my studio and I got a song on my mind and I can't bring it out the way that I brought it out. But when I was introduced to cocaine and I created music, I attributed that music to me being high. So I that's when he just started to get high. This is his words. I just started to get high because I attribute me coming out of my funk and being able to make music to me being high. So now I'm getting high. I get so high sometimes, I'm sitting in my studio and I'm not. The next thing you know, I feel like pop in the back of my head. Well, who's popping them in the back of the head? Ain't no ghost popping them in the back of the head or nothing like that. He ain't bothered by it. He was just trying to die. But it's just like the one thing he definitely asked me not to do is make excuses for him. Mm. People are going to believe what they're going to believe. Mm-hmm. It's his thing. They're going to believe what they're going to believe. I don't want to make any excuses. What I did, I did. The things that I did wrong, I did wrong. And I don't blame that on anybody else but me. I did these things. Being able to talk to him actually had me reflect on all the things that I had done wrong and write them down. Mm-hmm. And then I'm just sitting at these and looking at the things that I've done wrong and saying to myself, okay, I did this wrong, this wrong, this wrong, this wrong. Who did this hurt? Me. Who did that hurt? Me. Who did this hurt? Me. It all came to me. Who caused it? Me.
Right.
So he was the type of person that would go inside himself to see who he was as far as I was concerned. This is what I got out of him. And these are some of the things that I learned from him. That's why I have a lot of respect for this man. You know, I have a lot of respect for his music. I got a lot of respect for his life being told in the right manner. Mm-hmm. That's my goal, to make sure that's the reason. Les, I tell you, I've been holding on to this story. I started this story back in 2004, 2005, something like that.
Wow.
We had a Arclight Films. When I first finished the script, Arclight Films wanted to produce this. They were giving us $12 million to produce this film. Mm. At a particular time, they didn't want to close the deal unless they got Terrence Howard to play Ike. Nobody wanted Terrence Howard. He was doing the hustle and flow time, but he was coming, he was building it up. But he, like, you know, we got somebody, thanks to Les Boogie again, my my brother from another, what up, though? All you can come to the DR you want and represent the NY all you want. But this man right here, is because of him, we got somebody that wants to play Ike better than a hog on slop.
Wow. Okay.
You're going to be very surprised, and I think everybody is going to really fall for this actor playing Ike because he's going to be Ike,
right?
You know, we got a outstanding actor who's already ready to play Howlin' Wolf, and you're going to.
Oh wow!
Yeah, that's going to be dope, man. That's going to be really
wow. Awesome.
We actually have a guy who's willing to play Ike's best friend, and you're gonna know this guy, and he's anxious to be a part of it. So we have the foundation ready to go, and everybody that's a part of it is excited about it. Mm-hmm. So they've read the script, they've come to have a different feeling about them themselves. All of them believe that the script humanizes him. Mm. They actually see who this guy is, who he was, you know, and things of that nature. And again, I give a big shout out to Mr. Howard Clay Jr., his team, you know, got a couple of people on his team that are really, really fundamentally a part of what it is that we're doing. We got a Mr. You're going to hear about Mr. Jeremiah Woods, who is the lead on a nonprofit. He's one of the nonprofit advocates that's going to be, helping do the things that we need to do in that realm. Then we have a young lady by the name of Rabashia.
Rabashia
Bird. She is going to be an integral part along our team, which includes Fulton Pilot of Confunction. He's, like I said, the president of my company. Mr. Les Boogie right there, he is a part of our family as well. He's always going to be a part of our family. We have several other individuals that support us to the hilt. Mr. Hazen Mahon and his wife, Wanda. We have my adopted daughter, her name is Samantha, here in Florida. We got so much support going with us right now. You know, my family, friends, people, who just love the fact that we are allowing somebody else's story to be told, who have dragged through the mud for the longest, you know. And I'm just excited about it. And I know I'm rambling, but I'm excited.
No, you're not rambling. You're on point. And yep. But we seem excited. I mean, I'm excited as well, you know, and I've talked to both of these people here about this project. So they know a little bit about the project and they're excited as well. So, you know, when this comes to fruition, my brother, I am super, you talk about excited. I mean, I'm super excited. You know, we've been rocking this journey, man, and I appreciate you. You know, I want to give a shout out to the Brofessor, man.
Brofessor,
because he got you and I together.
He's host most of the time, but he's still my brother, and I want him to know that I love him dearly and things of that nature, no matter what. The same thing for Zane. Zane is my girl. I'm going to always love her and appreciate her as well. There's just so many people right now, like I said, that are my partner, Felton Pilot.
Let's talk about Felton.
Mm-hmm. Yes. There has been years where I was going to quit and just go back into doing things as a software hardware engineer. I can make money doing that. But I am the type of person, when I start something, I want to finish it. Felton would never let me stop doing what I'm doing. he will kick me in the back of my head.
Right.
But he would never let me stop. That guy is, he means so much to me. People just you'll find out when we close after you finish making this movie. Because I'm going to shout it to the highest mountaintop, because I would have quit a long time ago. We've been going after this thing for what
20 years?
Since 2000 with the Ike Turner story.
Right.
But we got so many years. Other projects. We just came, my publicist, her name is Linda Thomas. She's in Atlanta. She has been instrumental right now in getting people to finally look at the many projects that I have. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have 13 feature films. I got 4 television drama series. I have the makings of a great reality show that's meant to help people, educate people in jobs. And I have a sitcom.
Wow. That,
a couple of years ago, one of my projects, we were actually asked to come out to Las Vegas. The Juneteenth Foundation sent for me to come out to Las Vegas. He was supposed to come. He got caught up with some stuff and things of that nature. But we went out to Las Vegas and put on a play based on the second act of one of my most powerful projects, which is called Where's Harry? The Harry T. Moore Story. Mm-hmm. Now, Harry Moore was an advocate here in the 1940s, 1930s, 40s, and 50s here in Florida. He, on his own, went out and actually got 116,000 African-Americans to sign up to vote.
Wow.
And he would travel through some of the worst Klan infested areas that you could actually believe down in the top. Most people don't know that the most lynchings in the history of this country per capita was actually here in Florida.
Wow.
You know, and so this Harriet War story, we put on the Second June Foundation. And that actually got me two awards, I mean, well, two certificates from Congress. They appreciated us telling people about Harry Moore. We have an audio of it, and I'll ask Les to share it with you so you guys can hear the audio, because during COVID, we got bored. We couldn't do any movies, so what we did is an old radio-type presentation of the Harry Moore story.
Yeah.
So, you know, back in the day where everybody's listening to stories being told over the radio. Mm-hmm. So we couldn't get together because of it. Now, Felton is in Atlanta. We have a couple of people that's in Texas, one in California, New York, everything. Everybody their part sent pictures of the script to everybody. They did their little roles. We merged them in, edited it, and we came up with one hell of an audio. So it is great for trying to get people to go out to vote and things like that. I'm trying to get some of the radio stations to play segments of it. You know, play 15 minutes here, 10 minutes there, 15 minutes here. And I was thinking about creating a podcast myself just so that I can do that, you know, where you can hear this. And maybe get people to understand why it's so important to focus on voting. Because I'm sick of listening on the radio and hearing people, our people, sit up and defend 45.
Yeah, yeah.
This
guy. How is it possible that you, as a grown ass black man, I'm sorry.
That's all right. Keep it real.
We are not ruled by the FCC.
Well, you're a grown black man, knowing how hard it is for us in here, in the country, and you're sitting up here defending a man that's told you that he's going to take away your rights.
Exactly.
Incredible. Yeah.
And you sit up here trying to defend him. I listened to on the radio show Clay Kane on Urban View satellite radio. I love that brother. But he, and just like we have a couple of individuals around here, black. Oh, what is wrong with you? Oh, he gave us money. He didn't give you nothing.
He didn't give you money. He took your Social Security and just gave it to you.
Yeah, exactly.
You gave yourself money. Yes.
Exactly. I said he signed that check after Congress passed it to give you the stimulus. He signed it because he knows that you're stupid enough to believe that he gave it to you.
And what the American public does not realize, and at the time I was working for the census, is that money, that extra money people got in their paychecks, that was their Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
For people who were government workers in the military, all of that, you had to pay it all back.
That's right.
You weren't given anything. This was your Social Security that they decided they were taking back. So people are with this misconception that he did something wonderful. No, he didn't. He did not.
I said, talk to the brothers and sisters in New York. Mm-hmm. They will tell you what a thief he is, what a grifter he is.
I say that all the time.
Yeah, not but a comment.
I say that all the time. He would never pay his vendors. I remember he would never pay his vendors. And the vendors were told, well, you'll get more work because of who I am. I'm a big man. I'm a star. I'm this, I'm that. And never paid his bills. Never paid his bills.
That is a reason, and I said, I'm rapping. We have a television series that we're going to produce called Family Loyalty.
It's based on
three separate families. One being a political narcissistic family. Father's a senator. He's got twins, a son and a daughter. His son is just like his father. He's racist. He's homophobic. He's misogynistic. He's greedy. He's everything that you see in politicians today. His daughter is absolutely gorgeous, stunning. She's so beautiful that men and women try to talk to her. Her and her father don't get along because she's gay. Now, dad does not like that, but she doesn't like the way that her father presents himself. So anytime her father has any sort of actual gathering, she would dress up as a guy, have her best friend, who's an artist, paint what looks to be tattoos all over her body, including her face. Mm-hmm. She would go to these functions and try to embarrass the hell out of her father. Now, I figure that we, as humans, are visual people. Mm-hmm. We can sit up all day long and tell people that they should not be going with Donald Trump or the Republican Party and things. They're not going to hear you. But if you portray them on screen and let them see the damage that they're doing, maybe, just maybe, they might come around and start to understand you have to vote your interests. You think voting against us, or you want to try to damage us in some way, it's going to hurt you more than it's going to hurt us.
Right.
But this show is supposed to get us together and make us understand we come together too. We're the only ethnicity that does not go out of their way to help each other.
Yeah.
I mean, you see that with Puffy right now. He did everything against these people so that he can go up. But he got everybody's arm. He's got his foot on everybody's throat. Yeah. I don't want us to do that. I'm 65 years old. Well, my wife calls me a child because, I mean, but bottom line, we have to, what we're going to do, Les, US Media Group, that's the name of my company. I'm not a religious person. I'm a very spiritual person. So we're going to unite in spirit, and we're going to do the things that we need to do. Before I pass, I want to be able to build grocery stores in Detroit, and in the hood in Detroit. I want to help my neighbors, all the people that are there, to fix up their communities. And I want to pitch in money to help you fix your lawn, fix the shingles and your gutters and everything else. And we want to go in there, because right now, gentrification is going strong in Detroit.
Gentrification.
Mm-hmm.
Right. They're pushing us out of that city. That's right. What they're trying to do. And that's my hometown. I don't care where I go. That's my heart. And so I got to do something. And basically, talking is cheap. We got to get the right people together and try to do the things that we need to do.
Well, I can tell you this. You know, you're not just doing any talking. You've been at this since 2004 with one particular project, but you wrote books. You did all of that. You followed the inspiration of your dream. And a lot of people wouldn't even have done that. So, and you've been on it, even though you wanted to quit and you had people pushing you and saying, no, don't do it, Felton and others, you know, you still haven't given up. And I really believe in your projects because I've read the scripts. I've read them. Mm. And you know that. I've read them.
Yes.
And
yes.
I read, 128 pages. I said, oh, my God.
You said, I'll read that.
Oh, man, I don't want to read all. But you know what? Once I picked it up, and we're talking about Hell Pass and family loyalty, to name two, Hell Pass, I was explaining to my team right here. I want you to break down what Hell Pass is. Yeah, I see it in the background. You can explain a little better than I can.
You in the military.
Explain what that film is about, man, very quickly. Yeah.
Okay. Hell Pass is about during World War II, we were helping the Chinese fight against the Japanese. Isn't that crazy? So we needed to help get supplies to their guerrilla forces, but the Japanese cut off all the arteries. So what we started sending supplies over the Himalayan mountains with airplanes, but we were losing pilots because the crosswinds over the Himalayan mountains were hell. And so we were losing pilots. So one brilliant general came up with an idea of building a road from Lima to Burma. So you're talking going from India to China.
Right.
Through and around the Himalayan mountains. So we sent 16,000 American engineers, military engineers, over to that region to try to build this first 103-mile road. 60% of those soldiers, the engineers that went over there, were black.
Wow. So, wow.
These soldiers had to deal with the racist white soldiers. They had to deal with the Himalayan mountains. They had what is called a Nagi tribe that lived up in the Himalayan mountains, and they were headhunters. Real, true.
Whoa.
Wow.
Real, right. You're talking swamps, you're talking monsoons, you're talking disease and everything else. So these soldiers went over there and were determined, the black soldiers for sure, were determined to build this road because they still didn't get the respect that they deserved when trying to do this. Even though they have been bridges and things all over the world, and for the military campaign, they basically didn't get the respect that they need. Now, this particular piece is my biggest financial coup right here. And to show you how big it is, we want Denzel Washington to play the lead, and we want Matt Damon to play the head racist soldier. Because they had never been involved in any films like that together.
Right.
We are into headway. I have a company right now that loves HellPass so much that they are willing to talk to us and start to negotiate about trying to bring this picture to the masses. It's incredible. It's an incredible. I'm not saying it because I wrote it. I'm not saying it because I'm producing it. I'm not saying it because I'm totally into casting on it. Oh, yes, I am. But anyway. But it is a wonderful piece. And I think it's make us proud because you're going to see, you're going to see the hard work and determination of us being put in a situation that everybody else deemed like. The white generals at the Pentagon thought it was possible. They didn't feel like this could get done. Not only did it get done, it got done ahead of schedule.
Right.
Yeah, nice.
I think many people are under the illusion that black soldiers only were the cooks in the military, and that's not true.
Right. That's not true. No.
There's a lot that we still have to learn. I never heard of this story before, and I can't wait to see it.
Yes, and most people haven't heard of the Harry Moore story. Wait till you listen to that. It's going to make you mad, really, because we got lynchings in there and things. The people that I had to actually do it was mad. The actors. Bobby Wright was involved. He was mad. but basically, having a friend like Les giving me an opportunity to finally be able to tell people what's going on. Dude, much love to you because, I mean,
you too, my brother.
You have made me comfortable. You have made me so comfortable within myself because this is something that I never thought I would be able to do, is get in front of people and talk about the things that I'm doing. But this guy's made me comfortable.
I want to say, you know, I'm telling you, HellPass, the Ike Turner story, these are phenomenal pieces, man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Ike Turner is going to be controversial, but it's going to be controversial in a way that's going to draw attention because people love to compare. They're going to look at what Tina's story was about, how he was, you know, made to look like he was the bad guy. And then they're going to see this other side because I was listening to Judge Joe Brown and a good opportunity. Go online and look at Judge Joe Brown, what he had to say about Tina Turner, because when he was a kid, he had involvement with them where they lived at. He's from that same town that they were at. And he was saying that, you know, he's similar to what you're talking about. He was saying, look, he said, what y'all think went on is Tina is not that person. She was not good people. This is what he's saying. Now, I'm just repeating something. I'm not trying to say anything against Tina Turner. Yeah, but there is a controversy, and there is a different side to who people that actually knew her are saying about her in real life. You know, so this would be a very interesting story. Now, HellPass on its own, I see this as a star
studded. That's a blockbuster.
Yeah, I see it as a blockbuster. Put it. Yeah, I like that. As a blockbuster. I see Denzel. I see Sam Jackson. I see Keith David. I see all kinds of act. I see Morris Chestnut. I see all of our black actors having a part, be it a cameo or something involved in this film. And it reminds me of the films from back in the day when John Wayne was running around with Hemojima and all this other kind of stuff. Yeah. Now this is going to be us. You understand what I'm saying? And the story, and if you get, look, man, we get Denzel and get that in his hands, he's going to love this, and he's going to go for that. Once he signs on, everybody else is going to want to sign on.
Everybody's
going to
follow.
Yep. Everybody's
going to
follow.
Get his son, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, get his son in there, play a role. You know,
yeah, son sounds just like him.
There's
two
sons, I think, are now acting.
Yeah, yeah, you got a part in there. There's a part in there was a black guy that's he's like a how can I put it? He's a pain in the butt. He antagonizes everybody, and there's people. Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah. And then you have the other sergeants and all of them. Sam Jackson is gonna fit right. Can you imagine Sam Jackson? Denzel Washington, all of them in the movie, Matt Dame, all of them together? Come on, man. Come on, man. You're talking about the Dirty Dozens, man. You're talking about movies like that. You know what I'm saying? I'm excited, man. And family loyalty, y'all. Go ahead, AP.
I'm excited, man. I like to hear that.
yeah. Family loyalty, y'all, is another one, the television series. Now, let me just say this about Felton Pallett, to be very clear. Felton Pallett is a musician. He's with the legendary group Confunction. Love Train. Bruno Mars just did Love Train over, did a remake of Love Train. And then once again, that has now put eyes back on Confunction. They've been performing, but now they're going on tour. They've been on tour just simply because Bruno Mars made a remake of that song. So that's very big for him. And that's who he is. And he's involved. That's their musical director. He's also acting in some of the projects that AP has put together. So it's patience and tolerance, but at the end of the day, it's going to happen. Real quick, AP, I want to ask you about the Orlando Urban Film Festival. Tell us about that, because you were there. I was supposed to be there as well. I didn't make that, but tell everybody about the Orlando Urban Film Festival. That's Confunction.
Confunction and Bruno and
Anderson. Oh, Bruno. Okay. All right.
Okay. Now, the Orlando Urban Film Festival. Last year, I submitted Hell Pass to the Orlando Urban Film Festival for review for their screenplay award. Just so happens now, Hell Pass actually won.
You won. You just happened.
Wow.
Congratulations. Hell Pass
actually won. You did a short on it, or
just a script. Okay. But it won for script. So now what happened was the guys over there asked me could they review a couple of other projects. So I gave them King of Rhythm, I gave them Family Loyalty. They reviewed it, and they asked me to become the director of production for the Orlando Urban Film Festival.
Nice.
Wow. Mm.
I work.
I'll be able to go next year. I'm just saying.
This year is going to be outstanding. It actually starts August the 29th through the 31st. Glenn Truman, Cooley High, he's going to be there. Keith is coming back. He's going to be there. We're going to have invited Leon. We're waiting to hear back from him to come. But we're going to have a lot of individuals there that's going to be able to have question and answer sessions and things of that nature. It's a good time.
Right.
I had a good time with them last year. It's a good time. It's a way for up and coming writers and filmmakers to get their stuff exposed. They do a very good job in presenting for 3 days of shorts, features, everything that you could imagine coming in there. But the big one, the big thing is the award ceremonies. Mm-hmm. It's a star-studded red carpet affair at the Dr. Phillips Performing Arts Center, which is a heck of a center here in Orlando. I mean, you come dressed to impress, and you just have a good time. the after party he's having a mansion, everybody running around. It's absolutely wonderful. So what we try to do is try to get people, if you know anybody that has shorts or they want, they've done a film and they are not getting any eyes on it, please send them over to the Orlando Urban Film Festival. Just tell them to go to OrlandoUrbanFilmFestival.com and they will basically, the guys will review their work. And the ceremony, when they come to the ceremony, there is, I mean, like I said, it's a gala. It's incredible.
So AP, tell us how people can get in touch with you. If they want to actually reach out to you, give us your information because that's important.
Okay, well, I am not one of those individuals that really love social media and things of that nature. My wife created a Facebook page and a LinkedIn page. I don't do Instagram. I don't do any of that. I'm old school because I was a computer nerd. So I don't like getting involved with any of that stuff. But if they actually really truly want to reach me, if they Google AP Richard, RICHARD, you can see all the ways that you can get in contact with me through there. My agents, myself, my personal email address is even out there. And I tell people if they find it, contact me, you know, that nature. But I, you know, right now I'm so focused. If people want to actually help us, if they want to be a part of the production team, if they want to do any of that, contact Les. He is a part of the United Spirits family. He knows everything about everything. So if you actually want to be a part of what we're doing, you contact Les. Les will put in a good word for you, and we'll just go from there. Because we're still building United Spirits Media.
Right.
We're building. It's going to be awesome. You know. But before we go, I just have a couple of people I just want to say thank you.
Absolutely. Go ahead.
I have a person, a couple of people, my agents, Scott Hanover and Phil Arnold. Those are my managers. And I also like to say Joaquin, he's my agent. And nobody is going to ever be able to pronounce his name because it's Shehanigan.
Shenanigans.
Oh, man.
I have a couple of people over at a company called the Empowerment Group that's here in Florida. I would like to say thanks to Tom. I'd like to say thanks to Steve and Sharon Handel. Those people mean a lot to me. They watch out for me. Then they've been watching out for me for a long time. So I love you guys. Thanks a lot. And
thank you. We're looking forward to it, brother. We're looking forward. We're gonna move forward. This will be successful. It's already successful. Mm-hmm. So now I have to just let the world see it. And that's where it's at, man. We appreciate you coming on to the Les Boogie 101 show.
I talked to your whole show.
No, that's good. That's good because it's about you. You know, you needed a platform. We provided a platform. We're all in this together. And that's how we talk about helping one another. This is part of that. So, you know, without that, I mean, you get nowhere. You need to help. People need to help people. Mm-hmm. As simple as that. That's what we do. You know,
each one teach one.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm looking forward to it, man. You know, I was telling my people, I said, man, you know, listen, man, when we start this production and all that, and you know, I'm an old movie buff, man, and you know, I'm excited about film. Film is my first before even music, man. I'm a film guy, and I know a whole lot about films. I even went to school to Center Media Arts on 26th Street in Manhattan, New York. I trained to be a cameraman, so we had to do things like post production of it. So we had to put a whole show together, do the post production, do the pre production. We had to set up the dialogue. We had to have assistant directors. That was our final exams to go ahead and put a whole show together. I did a thing on a sports. I did like a sports show, and I used that as my final exam thing, man. And it was just incredible. I've always liked that. I was even thinking about doing acting at one point in time. So a lot of things just really come back full circle. You know what I'm saying? Well, so this is just my way of being able to get in, you know?
You're going
to
do some math, because all of y'all going to do some math.
AP, I'm telling you, both of them are in the entertainment field, not only behind the scenes, but Tattletales, the comedian. Miss Dolly Manette is an actual great singer, and she's also involved in the music industry in terms of management. She has a management company, and she manages a lot of great jazz artists, as well as Miss Allison Williams. Williams.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's a lot going on.
I said she might want to do something with Felton. You know, he handles all the music for all the projects. So, you know, there might be something that, you know. That
Listen, bring us on.
For real.
I have musicians trained, classically trained, know how to write, transpose, compose music. So,
music. And she sings herself. She wants to get back in there. And she sings herself. And she's moving to Florida. Yo, listen, she's moving to Florida. She just bought a home. In Florida.
Lakeland.
Oh, you're moving to Lakeland. That's like a good 40 minutes from me.
Yeah.
I'm 35 minutes southwest of Orlando. I'm 18 minutes from Disney.
Mm. Oh,
we went over there. I couldn't take it. Manhattan.
Yes. I think it's better than Manhattan, so I'm good.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, man.
We can go on and on, but I have to play this commercial break. But listen, it was great having you on. And next week, what's the gentleman's name? You're going to bring your executive producer.
Howard Clay Jr. Yeah, he is the executive producer for The King of Rhythm, the iTunes.
Okay. So next week, ladies and gentlemen, we'll have Howard K. Jr. coming on. He is the executive. What's his last name?
Like Cassius Clay.
Howard Clay Jr. will be on with us next week, ladies and gentlemen. And we'll be talking more about The King of Rhythm, the Ike Turner story. He is the executive producer. We want to thank Mr. A.P. Ricard for coming on. We want to thank you for listening. And once again, you can find us on Saturday mornings on Fresh Nation Radio at 10 a.m. Look for our social media links, and we come on iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Podbean, Spotify, every and anyone you could possibly think about. Just check us out on the Facebook. It's the Les Boogie One-on-One Show, also Fresh Nation Radio. And you have Tattletales page. You also have Miss Dolly Manette, and you have the Les Boogie One-on-One page on Facebook, as well as Instagram and everywhere else. If you can't find us, then you're not looking. All right? Thank you for coming out. Let's play this last thing. All right, AP. Thank you, brother.
Fresh Entertainment and Rick Watson presents Walking in the Rain, the stage play from the hit single The Rain by platinum recording artist Orange Juice Jones. You remember that song? I Saw You Walking in the Rain. It goes down Saturday, April 13th at the historic Black Spectrum Theater at 17701 Baisley Boulevard in Jamaica, Queens, New York, 11534. Tickets are $45, and you can go online to www.rickwatsonproductions.com. You can also go to eventbrite.com and just look up the hit play, Walking in the Rain. Showtime is at 7 p.m. Tickets are $45, and ticket information, call 516-362-9839. That's 516-362-9839, and we'll see you walking in the rain.
Frankie Crocker.
I'm Bobby J, formerly of WWRL and WCBS-FM in New York, and I'm proud to have known many of the great radio personalities of our era and to have been guided, nurtured, and mentored by many of them, especially Douglas Jocko Henderson, the ace from outer space, who used to go back and forth between his home in Philadelphia and New York City to work. My co-worker at Super 16, the man who a generation of rappers looked upon as their idol, Hank Spann. We called him the Soul Server. My teacher, my mentor, the dean of radio, Hal Jackson, who taught me there are no big eyes and little U's, that it's nice to be important, but it's more important to be nice. The Chief Rocker, Frankie Crocker, who came to New York City from WUFO in Buffalo to WWRL, WMCA, WLIB-FM, which became WBLS. The King of Rock and Roll, Alan Free, who was very important to me and my original vocal group, The Laddins, and whose style in my early days on the air I copied. Ralph Waldo Petey Green from Washington, D.C., an Emmy Award winner for his television work, worked at WWRL's sister station WOL in D.C., and whose life and exploits were portrayed on the silver screen by Don Cheadle in the movie Talk to Me. Tommy Smalls, Dr. Jive at WWRL, whose shows at places like the Lowe State Theater and the world-famous Apollo Theater rivaled Alan Freed for attendance and impact. Ralph Cooper Sr., a man who I used to sit in on his radio show at WHOM and take requests for him, recalled Ralph Cooper Dark Gable. You see, he was a movie star. He appeared in a film called The Duke is Tops that introduced to the world Lena Horne. Morning man extraordinaire at WWRL and WLIB, Eddie O.J., of whom the O.J.'s were named. In Philadelphia, the man with the goods was Georgie Woods. Also from Philadelphia, Reggie Lavong. Reggie replaced Tommy Smalls as Dr. Jive at WWRL and later on would work at WNBC under the name Just John. In Chicago, at WVON, which was owned by the Chess Brothers of Chess Records, and whose call letters stood for The Voice of the Negro, E. Rodney Jones, who had a profound impact on Don Cornelius of Soul Train fame. I worked in Memphis, Tennessee at WDIA, which was the home to not only one of the great radio personalities of Memphis, but he was a hit recording artist in his own right and alongside his daughter, Carla. Rufus Thomas, the big bad dog. We called him the Mouth of the South. These are just a few of the great radio personalities who, unfortunately, are no longer with us. But they left a lasting impact, particularly on people like me who, well, part of that last generation. We will never see their likes again. And coming up next, a look at the radio personality.